Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. In this part of Focus 580, we'll be returning to an issue that certainly we have talked about in this program and one that's generated a lot of conversation, debate, discussion on this college campus, and that is the issue of using Indian mascots, Indian images, symbols in college sports. It has been an issue on this campus, particularly over the last few years, although it's been discussed on and off going back further. And nationally, it has been an issue now for really almost 30 years, as Native Americans around the country have taken issue with schools that have used Indians as mascots. And as a result, a number of large colleges and universities, as well as some high schools, have made changes. And going back to 1969, some of the colleges that have dropped their Indian mascots include Dartmouth, Marquette University, Syracuse, Eastern Michigan, Stanford, Miami of Ohio, and a number of others. We will be talking about the issue here on this campus and also in a larger sense, and talk about how the issue has been discussed around the country with two guests in the studio. We have Tim Gallego. He is a publisher and founder of Indian Country Today, which is the largest Indian newspaper in the United States. He founded it in 1981. At the time, it was published as the Lakota Times. And initially, the idea of the paper was to provide news to people on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. However, interest in the paper and in that kind of news grew. And by 1986, it was being distributed in all of the reservations in South Dakota, North Dakota, Nebraska, and Montana. Then they moved their headquarters to Rapid City, South Dakota, where they still have their headquarters. But in addition now, they have bureaus in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and also in Spokane, Washington. And it is currently distributed in all 50 states and in 17 foreign countries. Also joining us on the program this morning is Charlene Teeters. She's an artist. She's a graduate of this university, and perhaps more than any other person is responsible for raising the issue of the Indian mascot of this university on this campus. They are both here as this weekend is homecoming on this campus, and they're here once again to get people to think about it and talk about it, and we're pleased to have them here on this program. And of course, questions, comments are welcome. Anybody who is interested in being a part of this conversation can do that simply by calling in. All we ask is that people are brief in their comments and allow space to other people, too. We'd like to get in as many people as possible. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line. Good anywhere you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Well, thank you both very much.
You bet.
For being here on the program.
My pleasure.
Why is this so important to you?
Well, first of all, I just want to greet any Lakota listeners out there. Mitako uyasin nawichak chijia machiapelo. And I simply said that we are all related, and I gave it my Lakota name, which it stands up for them. So we greet each other that way. I think it's an issue that I think if we had really stopped and thought about it 50 years ago or 100 years ago, I don't think it would have been as bad as what we perceive it to be today. And I lay a lot of this at the feet of the fans. The fans is a short for fanatic, and particularly when it became a popular event on television, football games with the Washington Redskins and other games, the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta Braves, Cleveland Indians. But it's a question of educating our own people sometimes.
I think it's clear as we've done, you know, worked on this issue and talked to organizations, talked to schools, that Indian people feel this is a problem and feel that it stands in the way of people seeing us for who we are. And all of the major organizations that represent our leaders, our educators, our elected tribal governments, our traditional chiefs, have all come out almost unanimously agreeing that these things come from ignorance, and it becomes a platform for people to act out their negative stereotypes of Native people. In fact, some of our tribal leaders who used to say, oh, well, we have more important issues out there, have begun to realize there is a connection between the disrespect for our tribal governments and our sovereignty and the impact that schools have, you know, put forward. So I think clearly, you know, the majority of Native people and our leadership agree this is a problem. Mm. And it's especially a problem when this is being put forward by educational institutions whose mission is to tear down stereotypes, not reinforce them, and to teach real history.
We have a caller and would welcome others. If you'd like to be a part of the conversation, give us your own opinions, ask questions. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller to start out with in Urbana on our line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'd like to say it's a real honor to talk to both of you. I saw Jay Rosenstein's In Whose Honor, and I've been using it to teach my composition classes to get the kids to think about this, and I think it's an incredibly important issue. It really disturbs me that Chief Illiniwek is still showing up at games, and I've really gotten some of the kids to really think about it. You know, I wish I could have some speakers come into my classes. I think that would reinforce it. I think a lot of the faculty is very concerned about this. They're very against the use of Native American symbols at universities. And I don't know if there's anything you guys could recommend that I could do in class to help the kids think about this more than what I'm already doing.
Well, I think you're doing the right thing by just, you know, showing educational videos on the issue, because in places like Illinois, in the Midwest, East, even in Indian country, we're tokens in our own homeland, and it's very difficult for us to be seen. These images that are being put forward by schools and by popular culture, by Hollywood, basically make us invisible.
Kids don't think about it, and, you know, their parents don't think about it. And I understand how it feels, because I'm Jewish and I belong to a minority, and it's not exactly the same thing, but I know what it's like. And, I think what you guys are doing is fantastic, and I just like to see more of it. I wish the university would back down on their position.
Well, if you would take the image that you see on the caps of the Cleveland Indians and transform that face from the buck teeth, red-faced little Indian with a feather sticking out of his head and put a Jewish face on it, African-American face, and then you'll see that it's not an honor.
But startlingly, even some of my Jewish students have not thought about this. I mean, it's taken a lot of discussion in the classroom to get them to see that, you know, this is something that's really demeaning to Native Americans, and to think about how they would feel, if that happened to, you know, emblem of Jewish culture, and they'd be horrified by it. But, you know, they don't think about it. No one's taught them to think about it. So I think this dialogue is really important. And I think, you know, you guys have a lot of supporters here, and I hope you keep up the work on it.
You know, there's one thing I think that bothers Shar and myself is to see so many African Americans that can't get the picture.
I've noticed that in the classroom as well, and I'm really shocked by it.
You know, I have a friend who writes a column. Her name is Betty Baye. She writes for the Louisville Courier, and I could not get it through her head. And one day I just finally said, look, Betty, suppose you're sitting watching a football game, just pick any team, the Kansas City Chiefs or whatever, and all of a sudden, their mascot is an African-American. Now, look up into the stands up there and watch all those fans up there with their faces painted black and wearing Afro rigs and chanting what they think to be African war songs. Her eyes got big, and it finally dawned on her what I was talking about, and she turned around and wrote a column about it. So that's.
Well, I hope I inspire some of the kids to do that. Some of them have written term papers on it and are doing deep thinking about it and have really changed their positions on it. And they're freshmen, so hopefully as they grow older, you know, they'll have some impact on their peers. I am very surprised when minority groups that I teach in the class, kids who belong to minority groups, have not thought about it and don't see anything wrong with it.
put them in our moccasins as you're talking to them. We have an English teacher out at Merced High School in California who uses some of the columns I've written, including that he uses Char's tape in whose honor to teach.
Yeah, I have used it. I started using it last semester. It's a very powerful piece.
And then he has them write compositions on it. And I'm amazed that at least 95% of the kids in his class now understand, and they write some very, very strong columns that support our stand on this.
Well, I guess I will have them write on, and I hadn't done that, but that'll make them think about it some more. I'm just...
Well,
really,
thank you for your
really
work.
I really wanted you to know how much I appreciate your point of view. I'm, you know, completely supportive of your position, and, you know, anything else I could do to continue supporting it, I'd be happy to do.
Just keep up the good work.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for the call. You know, I realize that I'm kind of asking the same question over again. And, you know, the first question I asked was why does it matter? And I'm sure that there are some folks who would say, who perhaps would agree with you and would say, I understand what you're saying, and would say, but, you know, why not just walk away from it? Why not just don't turn away from me and say, okay, if somebody else wants to believe something that's wrong, wants to hold mistaken images, if they just don't want to be persuaded, then I'm going to say, well, you know, that's just too bad for them. I'm going to go on living my life, and I'm not going to put the energy into fighting to convince somebody who probably is not interested in being convinced.
Well, one of the examples I used several years ago is I used Rosa Parks, who wouldn't give up her seat on a bus. And that had very little to do with changing the economic situation of the African Americans, but it had to do a lot to do with self-esteem. And you go out to the reservations where 95% to 100% of the kids in classroom are Indian kids, and you show them a picture, which we've done. You show them the stands of a Washington Redskin football game, and those kids are hurt and they're horrified. One of them said, why are they making fun of my parents? Why are they making fun of my grandparents? I mean, you get into the heart of the children, and when you're hurting them and their self-esteem, it's meaningful then.
Well, you know, one thing that happened recently on the Standing Rock Reservation where, you know, Tim is from, they had 40 attempted suicides there. And six young people committed suicide, you know, were able to go through with the process of killing themselves. There is a connection between the hopelessness that many of our young people feel and our culture being held hostage. So there is a connection. We who are out there working on this issue understand that connection. We hear people talk about the statistics. Isn't there more important issues out there? The alcoholism and homelessness and the teen suicide rate. Well, we know that. We come from there, and those statistics aren't statistics to us because they have names attached to them, and they are our people. They're people we know. So we understand the connection. I, of course, grew up in this culture, too, and had to tolerate Indians on cartoons, Westerns, and so forth. And we have learned to tolerate them. I admit it. You know, growing up here, I've learned to tolerate those things and never really addressed it until it had the impact that it did on my children, when I actually saw them, you know, sink in their seats. It made the connection for me, and I realized that I could not... not address it because it was too important. It's attacking and undermining our future leadership.
You know, let me put a human face on it. On the Pine Ridge Reservation, several years ago, there was our girls' basketball team from Pine Ridge High School called the Thorpes, and they were on their way to the state championship, and they had a star on their team called Sue Ann Big Crow, who unfortunately died in a car wreck when she was 17 years old. But she did take the team to the state championship. And on the way to winning that championship, her team was playing an all-white high school. And the white students in the stands start mimicking and making war whoops and sticking feathers in their hair and really making fun of the Indian basketball players. And Sue Ann told her teammates to be calm. And she went to the side and picked up a shawl, wrapped it around her shoulders, and walked out to the center court and did a very dignified Indian dance. The fans that were taunting her and everything, quieted down. They got on with the game, and the Indian team won. So it just, I mean, this is what we're getting back to, you know, the self-esteem of the Indian kids themselves.
We're about midway through this part of Focus. We have some other callers. We'll get right to them. And I would like to introduce our guest. Schools, generally high schools and in pro sports. Questions, comments, welcome, 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Next we'll go to Chicago for a call, line number 4. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm about 3/8 Lakota, and I had a couple of questions. First of all, I was curious whether you had ever heard, I have been told an ancient Tibetan prophecy exists, supposedly at least 2,400 years old, to the effect that, to quote loosely in you know, bad translation, when horses have wheels and iron birds fly, then the day of the victory of the red people is imminent. Have you ever heard of that?
No, I haven't.
Yeah. Okay, well, anyway, I thought that was worth mentioning. And to me, my perspective on all this is very much that I'm really pleased, you know, that you're doing what you're doing, mostly not because I think you're going to have enormous effect, but because I think it increases the chances for European people to save their souls, you know, at this late date. When I see this sort of spectacle, you know, to me, it is an illustration of the ongoing degeneracy and deterioration of this white culture, you know, reaping what it sowed, and it's not an occasion for merriment or rejoicing in my mind, but it is people commenting on themselves to me, as the host previously intimated, you know, much more than it's commentary on anyone else.
Well, you have comments?
No, I've never heard the old Tibetan.
You know, it's an interesting thing that Tibetan people, from a physical anthropological point of view, are almost indistinguishable from the central, for instance, from the Lakota people. And there is all kinds of evidence for a close connection there, you know, of prehistoric vintage. And so many lifestyle similarities, too. It's a fascinating study. But, well, good morning.
Okay.
You know, and thanks a lot.
Thanks for the comment. We have others. We'll just keep right on. Coming back here to, to Urbana and line number 1. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. Hi. I've missed bits and pieces, so I'm sorry if I'm going to repeat something that's been said. But I want to say thank you to both of your guests, because I really appreciate their activism and everybody who puts their life's blood into this kind of activism to keep us aware. The comment I wanted to make was, you know, when you say, you know, what do you say to people who say, why does this really matter? I've seen a button around campus a bit, I guess, that for me says a lot. It says, racial stereotypes dehumanize, I think is what it says. Or racial stereotypes are dehumanizing, and it has an image of the Chief Illini Wek thing on it. And I think that, you know, that's the central point of this. It's dehumanizing. And sure, I mean, an individual can go around, like you said, and portray different groups of people in whatever way they want, but especially for an institution like a university, one funded by our government, to endorse something dehumanizing like this, to have that be a way out there, part of their recognized name. I think that's ridiculous, and I think it says a lot about us in some ways, you know, our culture, our white culture. Like the last caller said, I don't think we're the only culture that degenerates, but we're in a lot of ways, like, we're like terribly primitive in our thinking, and that this kind of thing is okay. So I just like to say thank you, and that's my comment on why it's a problem.
All right, very good. Ed, want to reflect on that at all?
Well, you know, simple way to approach it is, you know, when the settlers first came to this country, they looked at it as a continent that needed to be conquered, whereas the Native Americans always looked at it as a continent that was to be nurtured and shared. So we have a total different philosophy from the get-go.
All right, we'll go on. Next caller is in Champaign, and it's line number 3. Hello.
Oh, hello. Mm-hmm. Good morning. I have a question for the guests.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to get your response to this. That is it possible? I mean, we're talking about these symbols and how they're very dehumanizing stereotypes, and I completely agree that is the case. However, is it possible that there's an opportunity here to use symbols like this, have symbols like this that are being used responsibly, that perhaps become ways for the American public to be educated about, you know, Native American culture or something like that? I just kind of like to get the response from the guests. I'll just hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, you know, I don't really think so. It seems that we're the only race of people that can't bring about the understanding and the change. Last night I had dinner with Jay Rosenstein and with Char, and we were talking about a restaurant that used to be right here in Champaign called Sambo's. Whatever happened to Sambo's? I mean, the black people found it to be demeaning and insulting, so it was done away with. There used to be a team in the state of Illinois that was called the Chinks. They're gone now. The Frito Bandito is gone. I mean, we see all the other mascots and other images of Hispanics, blacks, and Chinese that are disappearing. And we're having to stand up here and fight for the fact that we are also human beings. You know, we're not mascots.
I agree that there's always people who want to compromise that somehow we can do something good with these images. But what we're really dealing with, and the biggest enemy for all of us, is ignorance. And whenever we raise any kinds of issues that deal with Native peoples, we hear incredibly arrogant comments about Native people, which really speaks to the miseducation of Americans in general. And I always ask people what do they know really about Native people? What do you really know about the peoples whose lands you now occupy? And the truth of the matter is we only really think about Indians a couple of times a year. You know, around Columbus Day, they'll think about Indians and they may, you know, try to come up with some kind of a, you know, program or, comment. Around Thanksgiving, of course, they think about Indians again, but only in a very superficial manner. In our grade schools, they do these plays, they reenact, and go through the mythology of America, you know, which is, you know, the holiday Thanksgiving. And the rest of the year, they don't think about us at all. And the only place that we're present in the educational institutions is through these mascots. So there's very little real education going on in these educational institutions, just these sort of playing these stereotypes that dehumanize Indian people. And, of course, is the continuation of the genocidal practices. You know, it's meant to kill the culture, to dehumanize the people.
Can I add something here? You know, Charlene, I sat back in my comfortable office and wrote about these things for almost 20 years. And as a journalist, I felt it was my duty to try to educate through writing. Whereas Char was out there like on the front lines, and a lot of times, I mean, she was spat on and attacked, knocked down by fans that were taking an exception to her protesting the use of their mascot. So that sometimes is the kind of mentality that we both have had to deal with.
There are a lot of people, and I have certainly talked to some of them, who, when they hear you use terms like the chief being a racist, being dehumanizing, being a very negative stereotype that's embarrassing and humiliating to Indian people, young and old, they say, but we don't mean it like that. They say, you know, they are associated with the university. Maybe they're graduates of the university, and they have good feelings about the university. And the chief, as they were in school, was the symbol, and so they associate the good feelings they have with the university with the chief. And they say, and I believe they say it sincerely, some of them do, that when they see the chief, they feel great pride. They feel they think only good things about the time they were in college and the university, and that for them, the chief represents strength. It's a very positive image, and it just it fills them with pride. And that when they hear people say, but from my perspective, mm-hmm. the chief doesn't make me feel proud. The chief makes me feel bad about who I am. And when I see my children, you know, and their reaction, I'm horrified, and it makes me want to cry. These folks, they don't understand that, you know, because for them, it's a very positive thing for them.
When I first came to this campus, this place was just permeated with all kinds of images, derivatives of the chief. There was the Miss Illini Squaw contest that was at one of the sororities. There was a bar in Campus Town that had a falling down drunken Indian over and over again, had crosses in his eyes, big nose, falling down drunk. We saw buck and squaw dances in the sororities and fraternities. We saw all kinds of caricatures of Indians being used on everything. And I was recruited with two other young men. So the three of us walking around campus didn't feel welcome, you know. And when we saw all this activity going around us, we didn't feel welcome. There was really no way for us to address it. As soon as you ever, you know, challenged it, you became targeted. And that history continues to this day when Native people try to address this issue and this enormous responsibility of trying to undo the damage and the misinformation that's being put forward by this university, when on the shoulders of this few Native students who happen to be here address it, they are also targeted. So in a sense, the university is using something that becomes like a litmus test for Native students who come to this campus. And then they're treated accordingly. Are they a good Indian or are they a bad Indian? And they continue to use this sort of race baiting, you know, by searching out those Indian people who will agree with the university. And then those people who address the issue and say, this is a problem. It makes me uncomfortable. It makes me feel unwelcome. It targets me and my family, that kind of thing. This is not what a university environment is supposed to be about. It creates an incredibly hostile environment for Native students. And for non-Native students, it's not fair for them either. You know, they should be able to have a symbol that they can be proud of, you know, and we want that for them too.
You were talking earlier about how you would encourage people as they're thinking about this to try to put themselves, to see it as you see it. Is there any way in which you can do the other and try and see the chief as the loyal alumni who thinks this is a great sort of source of pride sees the chief?
Well, I can only look at it as supposing the University of Illinois had chosen another race. You know, suppose they had chosen an African American or any other race, I don't think they would have this mascot anymore. Hmm. We don't have the numbers or we don't have the political clout. We have an opportunity to get on shows like this occasionally. And I think it's a credit to Shar that a lot of the things she experienced when she first came here as a student in the town, this town, Champaign, aren't as prevalent as they were now. And I think it's simply because she was here, she spoke out about it, and I think a lot of people turned around and looked at what they were doing and thought to themselves, this isn't something that we should be doing because we're hurting a race of people. So in her own quiet way, I think she brought about changes right here in this community. But I always have to look at it, pick another race, you know. People say to me, well, what about the Vikings? We got Vikings. Well, there are no more Vikings. They're a creature of history. You don't see Vikings walking around town anymore, but you do see American Indians.
We have about 10 minutes left. We have several other callers. We got somebody calling from a car. I want to get to them since it's costing them a little bit more here. Line number 3. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I just wanted to say that I have nothing but admiration for Char, and I'm a Native American in the community, and we talk about children and the effect it has on Indian children, on my own children, and I agree wholeheartedly that it is a very deep problem. But some of my colleagues who realize, who don't realize that this is also hurting their own children, it's giving them, you know, the premier flagship university is using a symbol that allows their children to extrapolate that kind of attitude into the treatment of other people. And it just spreads out from there. So I just wanted to say that. I also wanted to say that I am a respected professional, and I remember walking into a minister's home one day, and his 9-year-old daughter took one look at me and started whooping around the kitchen. Mm-hmm. He was totally embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. But it occurred to me that this is the kind of thing that this university is allowing to happen to all children, and particularly to Native children. So I have nothing but admiration for what Charlene has done, and it's always moved me when I see that scene of her standing there against all those fanatics. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Well, let's just keep on taking folks here. Next, we'll go to someone calling from near Salem, line number 2. Hello.
Hi, I've enjoyed the program. I wanted to ask our guests if they're familiar with a Lakota Sioux dance troupe that's going to be performing in Southern Illinois at Red Lake on Sunday. It's at the college. They say that they've performed for audiences at the John F. Kennedy Center in Washington and the World Musical Institute in New York City. It's a one-hour free demonstration for the public.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with them. In fact, I know a lot of the dancers.
Is that something not to miss?
You should not miss it at all. They put on one terrific show. And it's not just the dance. They go into the symbolism of what the dance actually means. And in so doing, they also do a short history of the Lakota people and where they've come from, where they are now, and where they're going, and a little bit about our spirituality. You know, you would call religion. We call it our spirituality.
Okay.
So it's something you would definitely enjoy very much.
It's at 3 o'clock on this Sunday at the Ren Lake Theater.
We'll encourage your friends to go, too.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. And again, on to another call. This is Urbana once more in line number 1. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, thank you. I also have enjoyed the program and wish very, very much that somehow or another this difference, you know, there's a conflict, not about beliefs. I think that most of the people on the campus would agree 100% with what is being said today. They do, truly do not, I don't believe, feel antagonism or scorn or anything. They do feel pride in belonging to the University of Illinois in some way. Now, the interesting thing is that all of us who live in the state of Illinois had a lot to learn back in the days when I was in school. Nobody mentioned anything about the Illini Indians. I didn't know why it was called Illinois. It just simply, that was its name. And as I grew older, I realized how many places in this country have names that go back to Indian times. And it has just really stunned me. I you know, even cars and rivers and other states and heavens knows. And none of us know the history of all of that. But the assumption was, you know, when people started coming here, when there were explorers coming to what they thought was an empty, ignorant land, they found a cultured, intelligent people who had a way of life, who didn't need their European ways, but the assumption was that this, you know, that they were going to bring all this wonderful stuff to these poor ignoramuses. I don't know how you erase that. I really don't, because they didn't mean to be doing the bad thing either. There are a lot of people who do things without thinking and without knowing and without any idea of how, when they toss the pebble, where, how far it's going to reach. I wish you good luck, too. One thing is true also, and that is that a great university, I love it, and I'm a graduate of it, as is my husband, but I know that one of the things that keeps it grinding away is money. Now, if you could hit that particular problem, if the alums who sponsor many of the programs, much of the research, who give buildings, who give this, who do that, and they have made money. Now, we didn't, okay? But even so, that's one of the one of your big stumbling blocks. It's not that they don't want to make you happy and make all the alums happy. It's just that the alums have to be pampered or ceded to because they're the source of some of the oil that keeps the university going. I don't know whether or not you can approach it from that kind of standpoint. You really can't. But good luck with whatever. By the way, are you familiar with the very impressive, wonderful, stirring, spiritual statue of an Indian standing with his blanket around him? It's up in one of the parks up to the north, and I've always heard of it as being the Black Hawk statue, but I don't think it is. And so it is beautiful, and it's an image that is just absolutely thought-provoking. Good luck.
All right. Okay. Thanks for the call. Any comment you don't want to make?
No, thank you for your call, ma'am.
How much difference do you think it would make in terms of people's attitudes, not only on this, but other sorts of issues that touch on conditions for Native Americans in America today? How much difference would it make if there was some more in teaching in schools, particularly primary and secondary schools, more in history, more teaching about Native Americans?
Well, you know, I think Charlene and I, you know, we're not just Johnny One Notes that this is the only issue we dwell on as mascots. It's just probably one of many. My newspaper covers issues from politics to corruption to you name it. I mean, we cover all issues that are important to Indian people. And the lady that just called talked about the history books. And the history books I learned from, I went to school at Holy Rosary Indian Mission on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. They depicted the people, my people, as heathens, as savages, and I'm sitting in school with all my classmates, Indian people, you know, two bears, two hawks, you name them, all the people I went to school with, and we're being taught from history books that are telling us that our own people were heathens and savages. So, I mean, that's hard for us to overcome and reach a certain age. We have so many of our kids drop out of school around 8th grade, 9th grade, because all of a sudden they find out what we were being taught just doesn't ring true. And therefore, why continue my education when, you know, they've taught me so much stuff prior to that that I don't believe in or that's just pure baloney?
Well, I think at about this point we're going to have to stop because we're here at the end of the time, and my apologies, we have some people we can't take, but I'm sure on future programs we'll have an opportunity to discuss the issue once again. We want to say thanks to Charlene Teeters and Tim Gallego. And if people are interested in sampling some of Indian Country Today, people who have access to the Internet, there is an electronic edition, so at least they can see a few articles and kind of get a sense of what sort of interests you have.
www.indiancountry.com. You can at least see our front page and some of our articles.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. I enjoyed it very much.